Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles transform the way they work. After closing their New York City showroom, they started doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, people from all over the world can come into their showroom. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, man. And I am Michael Irvin, and I just want to jump into this stuff because there's so much going on around the National Football League. So many stars are on the move. J.J. Watt, where would he play next year? What's going on with Russell Wilson? And everybody wants to know about this Dak Prescott and Dallas Cowboys situation. We got to jump all around and all into all of that. And speaking of quarterbacks, we're going to talk to the quarterback whisperer. That's right, the head coach of the Super Bowl 55 championship football team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's Coach Bruce Arians. We'll join the MIP. But let's jump right into what's going on. And I don't know how I rightfully feel about this because I'm of that old age and that old day of a player being drafted by a team and finishing his career playing there, even when a team is all made much better, if it's kind of like what I did, even though it was painful, going in early and losing early, and then you take that team to a winner, and then you finish your career with that team. That used to be the marker by which everyone wanted to reach. But now everything has changed. And everybody wants to win a championship, but it just seems like staying with that home team doesn't mean as much as it used to mean. And it's kind of confusing. Okay, let's jump right. J.J. Watt asked the Houston Texans for his release. He asked, and he was granted. And I was amazed, first of all, that he asked, because J.J. Watt seemed, for all that he's done on the football field and winning, you know, defensive MVPs more than once, and then raising all of that money in the midst of tragedy, it seemed like he was connected to Houston forever. Connected to Houston forever. Never did I think J.J. Watt. And all of the years, too, that J.J. Watt didn't make a full season, you know, and there were a couple of years, like 3 years in a row, he didn't make a full season. They never once stepped to him and said, give us back some money or we got to move you or anything. So I just thought that was going to be a match made in heaven, and so shall it be. He was going to stay with that team. But J.J. Watt did not. He went and asked for and was granted his release. Blew my mind that he asked. Blew my mind that they granted. Blew my mind they didn't even try to get a helmet for him in a trade. You don't ask for anything, J.J. Watt? I mean, I'd imagine maybe because he sat down and they just realized that we'll allow you this opportunity. You've given us all of these great years. We will allow you this opportunity and not send you somewhere, because if you're leaving Houston, you want to go to a contender. You're leaving to win a championship. So we don't want to send you to a place that's farther behind than us to get the draft picks or something like that, which which I understand as kudos to the organization if they did that. But hey, you couldn't say, JJ, give me a list of teams you want to go to and let me work with those teams and see even if I can get me a helmet or some cleats for something. Because, I mean, he is a pretty good player. So that was kind of strange to see it. I hope it works out for JJ. I do. But I wonder about where would he end up. Like, you know, even in his goodbye video, you saw he had on his Wisconsin shirt. So people are speculating about Green Bay and how will he work in Green Bay. And I think that would be a great place for him. But JJ Watt has to be sitting here saying, okay, I'm leaving a pretty harsh situation where I know we have no chance because my quarterback is making rumblings. Okay, do I go to Green Bay where that quarterback over there is making rumblings? I mean, how do I know they got their stuff together? Yeah, I want to go home. I don't imagine Aaron Rodgers not being with the Green Bay Packers this upcoming season. But I didn't imagine a lot of things we're going to be talking about here today. So you know, in this league, what you're learning is, I don't know if anything is for sure. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year. I anything seems to be possible as this thing unfolds now in the National Football League. So I know he looks at Green Bay. That'd be a good situation. If he could get a chance to go home and possibly get to a Super Bowl, that would be great. But Tennessee is another team I looked at because of Coach Vrabel. You know, he has a connection with Coach Vrabel. He used to be the DC over in Houston. I think Tennessee, and you'll get a chance. The only thing is, like, left Green Bay, and he went to Minnesota, excuse me. And I said, oh, my God. Like, if you have to leave, why go to a team in the division and come back and play that team that you love so much twice a year? You know, it's already hard for the people to see you leave, and now they got to come back and play against you. That's what the one thing about Tom, when Tom went to Tampa, you know, at least it was in a whole nother division. So all of the Patriots fan base that love Tom can still cheer and root for Tom over there because it's not affecting me over here. You see what I'm saying? A lot of the people that I talk with, and I do a radio show on WEEI in Boston, for the most part, they were pulling for Tom. But had Tom gone to somebody in their division, it might have been a different thing, you know. So that may be something J.J. Watt should think about. Buffalo, good spot. I've heard Dallas. I've heard Kansas City. Here again in Dallas, it'll be like the Green Bay situation, even though Dallas could, Dallas. We could use them. Dallas could use them. That's what I mean. Dallas could use them. A big boy. Dallas will be, oof. He can stay in Texas. He talked about how much he loves Texas. He can stay in Texas. He's out of the Texans' way because he's in the other conference. That would be a great matchup. I won't extend on it too much because I don't want people to think that it's a personal thing. And even though it is personal, I would love to see J.J. Watt play for the Dallas Cowboys. Him and DeMarcus Lawrence. On that defensive line, that could be a great fit. And that profile of playing for the Cowboys, that'll be big. We'll talk about a little bit more on that later too. Or he can go to the Chiefs. I believe he'll get, if he gets a chance, he should go to the Chiefs, and he will go to the Chiefs. J.J. Watt is one move that shocks me. This Russell Wilson thing, guys. This Russell Wilson thing is heating up. I told you, I didn't believe it when Brandon Marshall said Russell Wilson was probably going to be in some trade talks. I didn't believe it, but seeing it now blows my mind. Seattle, I know, would like to get J.J. Watt also, but here again, the Russell Wilson situation lingers out there. And I'm kind of talking about these quarterbacks and what we're seeing in these quarterbacks and all of this movement between quarterbacks now. You know, let me start by putting the numbers out here. You know, right now, on average yearly salary, Patrick Mahomes is about $45 million. Deshaun Watson is $39 million. Russell Wilson makes $35 million. Ben Roethlisberger makes $34 million. Those top guys right now. Those top guys right now. Russell Wilson, I in his conversations and interviews, he's been talking about wanting some input on personnel decisions. And Rodgers kind of basically got it out there that he's looking at a contract situation. I was surprised that Aaron Rodgers was able to bring that up right after they lost that championship game and didn't take much backlash from it, but so be it. He's talking about a contract situation and talking about extending him. I guess that gives him some kind of security since last year you went and drafted Jordan Love. Remember I told you the Aaron Rodgers thing was all about power play? That's what that is. That's a power play. You guys are trying to tell me my days are numbered. Well, I'm going to make you pay me. I'm going to make you pay me right now some more money that'll make sure my days are extended beyond what you're telling me they are numbered. That's what I mean by a power struggle. And Green Bay knows they can't go into the next season without Aaron Rodgers after he just won the MVP. So that right there is how that power struggle plays out. If he gets them to get a new contract, then that means that contract, you got to at least let me quarterback until we get value of this contract. And that's what Aaron Rodgers is doing. I'm confused with what's going on with Russell Wilson. I don't know if this is coming down to going to be a contract situation with Russell Wilson. You know, when he signed, he was the highest paid at 35. Of course, the last couple, two guys that signed, Watson and Mahomes, have gone past him. Or is it really just about the power struggle of having some kind of input on what's going on with the football team? I already told you how I feel about that, because ultimately Russell Wilson's name is the one we're going to talk about. But I can't fathom. Russell, remember every interview, what did Russell Wilson end it with? Go Hawks. Go Hawks. I mean, he sold the Seahawks better than Pete Carroll and anybody else. Go Hawks. On every interview, other people have picked that up. He started that. I don't know where he got it from, but everybody, other guys have picked that up. When they try to end the interview, you know, go Cowboys, go Raiders, go. So Russell moving, it just seemed like such a perfect fit. And I don't understand why it always comes down. And in all of this stuff, it comes down to egos. It comes down to egos, man. That's what's going on with Russell. I told you that's what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. It comes down to egos. And guys can't work together. And power struggles. I watched it with Jimmy and Jerry. We watched it all with Tom and Bill Belichick. And now we're seeing it sprout up everywhere. Of course, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers are doing it. Now Russell Wilson and the Seahawks are doing it. We saw Carson Wentz in the Philadelphia Eagles situation. Power struggle there between head coach and quarterback. All of these power struggles. And there's a power struggle with Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott representative. And this is what I've come to, guys. And I just want you to hear this out and share your thoughts on this. This is what I come to. The part that trips me out is if we're going to have all of this quarterback movement, all of these guys moving around as quarterbacks, then isn't it, okay, and all of them moving around, and all quarterbacks are going to get paid pretty good money. If you're a top quarterback, you're going to make, let's just say, upwards of $40 million. Then doesn't it come down to making sure that you get your good team that's in a good market so you can capitalize on all things, on all things? This is why the Dak Prescott thing confuses me. Okay, for what I'm getting, Dak wants $40 million. For what it is, if he plays under the franchise tag, he's going to get $38 million. So we're $2 million apart per year. Per year. Say this is a four-year deal. That's $8 million on the high end that you are apart. Say somebody comes to the census and say, well, let's split the baby and go at 39. Then really maybe you're talking about $4 million that you're missing out of this. This deal is going to be, if it's a four-year, $160 million deal. Why are we bickering over $8 or $4 million? On a $160 million deal. When I see this, this worries me. Because personally, I love having Dak Prescott as my quarterback. I love having Dak Prescott as the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. But this worries me that maybe Dak Prescott won't be the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys forever. When we have to bicker, I don't understand how is it that Jerry and Dak's representatives can't close a $2 million a year gap. And I say I don't know rhetorically, because I do know. That's how you know it's come down to an ego situation between the representative and Jerry Jones. It has come down to, I'm going to show you we're going to win. And Dak Prescott is in the middle of that. I just want to talk about this. Because, look, I'm looking at it like this. Okay, Dak can go play on a $38 million franchise tag this year. Dak's coming off of, and I hope he gets back totally healthy, coming off of a pretty bad injury. You know, they said 2 years ago, well, we're betting on Dak. When Dak had that shoulder injury going into the Philadelphia game, very, very well could have missed that game easily. Could have missed that game. And he said, okay, we're still going to take the risk. And then last year, of course, we got the leg injury. The leg injury very well could have been even more severe than that. Now coming back off of the leg injury, we're bickering on a $160 million deal about the difference between $4 and $8 million. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. But why would Dak Prescott want to play quarterback somewhere else? Is $4 million or $8 million worth going and playing football for somebody else? There is no higher profile than you can have. You'll make money, I'm sure, in the off season. You'll make money with that brand. And I understand Jerry may use that. I understand everybody doesn't like him using that. I'm not talking about what Jerry's using. I'm talking about your own brain. Use your own brain. It's damn better for you to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys than it is for you to be the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. I don't care how you chalk that up. I'm not putting down Tennessee Titans. I'm just telling you the truth about the reality of what's going on. You get a higher profile, and it's about profile. That's what these guys are arguing about. They want control. Control will raise their profile. So don't tell me, oh, it doesn't matter. I know Dak is listening to his representatives, and I know he hired him for that reason. But at some point, somebody has to say, wait a minute. Let's make sure egos are not running this and smart decisions are. And when it comes down to a $160 million deal with probably a $4 million swing, and I'm looking at quarterbacking this team over the Dallas Cowboys, that's not smart business. I'm sorry. That's not smart business. And I'm not siding with Jerry. I'm not going against that. I'm just saying, come on, man. Let's make sure egos are not driving this negotiation and smart decisions are. We are in a world now where athletes are taking more control of their future, demanding more out of the people around them. I understand that. I understand it. I just don't think it's smart that Dak or Dak's representatives allow him to go into this next year if he has that kind of money on the table. We don't, and you know, coming back, and God knows I hope he comes back well. I hope everything's healthy. But we do not know. And if you have complications, I'd rather go ahead and sign this long-term deal and have them, you make them have to wait on you if you have complications, as opposed to taking the 1-year deal and having complications that are unforeseeable, God forbid, and you just dropped that $160 million. Yeah, you took home the $38 million, but you left about $122 million on the table. That's all I'm saying, man. If you can look in the mirror and say, I'm making the best business decision by not signing a long-term deal, then okay. But if you look in the mirror and say, man, we just got to win this deal. We're going to win no matter what. Then that's not smart. That's not smart at all. And I hope and pray that all of those guys in the end will be able to look Dak, his representatives, and everybody, and say we're making the best business decision for our client. We're not trying to sell, get a deal that everybody can write about that will help us in the long run get the next kid and the next kid. We're about getting the best deal given the circumstances surrounding this situation for Dakota Prescott. That's all I'm hoping. And I'm hoping at some point Dak Prescott even steps in and says, okay, guys, I want to be here no matter what. There is no place that I want to play. Dak just said that's the only way he sees it when he texts back to Blake Jarwin the other day. If that's the only way you see it, man, let's get something done and get this behind you, buddy. You're supposed to be a Cowboy for the rest of your days. Let's make it happen, and let's not stop. Let $4 million on a minimum stop this. You know, let's not let that happen. You can make it up on the back end, and you'll make plenty more on the back end. All I'm saying is don't let two other men's egos get in the way of your history. Dak, write this history right here. You take the Dallas Cowboys back to the Super Bowl, buddy. I guarantee you the profile that you will have will be greater than the $4 million that you left on that table. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to break down the Cowboys next week, and then I'm going to have my guy Rich Eisen on as we break down the 2020 NFL season. But right now, we're going to talk to the man that broke down the NFL this year, head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Super Bowl 55 champions, Bruce Arians, next on the MIP. Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles reinvent the way they work. When the pandemic hit, the bike shop had to close their New York City showroom. They found a way to reopen by doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, the team can meet with two or three times the number of customers than they could before. And people from all over the world can visit their showroom, learn more about their story and others at Microsoft.com/Teams. I'm joining the MIP, man. He's just a great dude. He's a two-time coach of the year. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion as an assistant coach and a Super Bowl champion of Super Bowl 55 as a head coach. He's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, joining the MIP, Coach Bruce Arians. Coach, how are you doing today, Coach?
Dude, I'm great, Mike. I'm great. And I want to thank you again for picking us. You know, I watch that show every week before the game, and you don't want to pick this. You went put the wolf hat on. Yeah, hey, I was loving it.
I can't believe they let me long wolf you guys three times this season. They were big games, you know, and I understand because it was, you know, back and forth. Everybody, I said, listen, and I kept telling them, Coach, we get caught up in numbers. If football comes down to that perfect decision or the right decision in that critical time. You know what I mean? And Tom Brady has made this plenty of times. It's hard to go against him. And it comes down to that, Coach, and it did. It came down to it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, Michael. He is so calm all the time. Even, you know, we're down 17-0 at half in Atlanta. Shit, we might be out of the playoffs. He's just calm. And when he grits his teeth, you know he's serious. He's like, we got this. We're going to score every time we touch the damn ball in the second half. And we put up 31. And same way the Super Bowl. same exact demeanor in the locker. Gave a great speech to the guys after. I don't give speeches, you know. I say, hey, let's go. Shit, it's time to play. And he rallied the troops really, really good.
Well, I want to get into some of that, Coach, but I want to do an overall, Coach. Just okay, now it's a week later. You know, you've had some time to sink in. It all had time to sink in and to just try to grasp, because the enormity of winning that Super Bowl that way, all the things that were not in order with COVID, and then for everything to fall in order and play a Super Bowl at home. Talk to me about this whole Super Bowl journey, man. A week later, after having the time, chance now to kind of digest it.
Yeah, the first thing I realized, I ain't no smarter than a coach. Yeah, you know, I'm still the same asshole who got fired five times. But the enjoyment of the parade, the enjoyment of seeing the players, the families on the field, everything has sunk in for me. Coming up the river, holding a Lombardi trophy, and all the fans going crazy. I just looked at Jason. We were on the same boat. I said, holy shit, we did it. We actually did it. And just holding that Lombardi was like, man, it finally hit me. I got a tear in my eye. I was like, you know, I had a cocktail. We said, let's go. Let's finish this ride out.
Coach, speaking of that parade was, I'll say, hell of a parade now. You had guys throwing around the trophy. I've never seen anything like that. Throwing around the trophy. I want you to tell me your thoughts when you saw the trophy being thrown around. And then I want to ask you about what else I saw when everybody grabbed that microphone, Coach. Because that was some funny stuff. You are crazy. I mean, every time, dude, hey, Devin, was that did Levante get something there? Say, I'm just telling everybody. He said, "Oh, you coming back?" Yeah, I mean, you just kept grabbing the microphone, telling everybody they will be back. Man, what was that, Coach? What was that like?
Oh, it was perfect. I mean, I love those guys, and I know they don't want to go anywhere. You know, on the money talks, but hey, we're gonna do everything we can to keep this band together, and they want to stay together because they know we can do it again. When you got Tom leading the charge and he's already out practicing, you know, we can make the dollars work, I think, and keep these guys together, because this was such a close football team. I mean, Tom Brady said it to me, if you were a total football junkie, this was the year to be in the NFL, because all you did was go home, go to work, go home, go to work. And it was just football nonstop. There was nothing to pull you away. No distractions of any kind. COVID might have been a distraction, but it really helped our football team.
Right. Okay, but Coach, on a deeper level of that now, I know it's a fun moment. It's a great moment. And to see grown men in that way, I mean, yeah, it's a football game and everybody makes a lot of money, but that's the kid stuff right there. When you're doing that, that's the kid stuff that every football player addresses. And I try to tell people that I work with, get out of the analytics. Get into the emotions of this game, too, now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That stuff, when you're doing that stuff, it's easier to make the money work, because the kid or the player, he's like, we want to make the money work. You know what I mean? Because you did that, Coach. And I'm just saying, do you – like, Jimmy would be calculating and understanding why he's doing that. Now, do you understand that doing that will help – makes those guys want to come back to hear their coach say that? Because most of the time, nobody would do that. Everybody's firm on business.
No, we had already met personally. Those guys that were on stage,
right?
The free agents, I met personally and said, look, we're going to do every single thing we can in our power to make sure you don't leave. And you know, the bond of this football team was so tight. I love all these guys, and they love each other. That's when you're accountable to each other. You know what I mean? When a team, people talk about chemistry, it's really accountability.
Right.
To beat COVID, not go out. You know, not go out and stay healthy all year. That's the first speech we gave this year. If we beat COVID, we can kick the shit out of anybody else. Hmm. You know, but we can't play without five starters. And our guys made that. And these guys got really, really close.
It's hard. I ain't gonna lie. I'm just glad. Yeah, Del Mayberry with that street right there in Tampa.
Yeah.
All this on Del Mayberry. I'm just, hey, I used to have my girlfriend. I was telling Mike Evans, she lived in Tampa when I was in college. I used to drive up, and we used to drive down Mayberry. I looked at all of those little clubs. I said, I don't know if I can handle being drafted.
It's club capital of the world, brother.
It is the capital. I pay homage to all young guys who can go there. And Mike Evans, guys like who can succeed in that environment. It takes some commitment to succeed in that environment. Coach, you said something earlier. You said, you know, the Super Bowl. You say you because I was going to ask, what did you say? Because my discussion with those guys on the desk was I was like, you guys don't understand what this is to be playing a Super Bowl at home. I mean, what kind of man are you? This is your home. You can't let them win because every time you come in here next year to play the regular games, you're still going to see that confetti falling on Kansas City. You can't do it. You know what I'm saying? I was talking about from an emotional standpoint of not on our ground. And you said you didn't say much to the team. Tom Brady spoke to the team. Take me through that.
Yeah, you know, I do most of my – I send my message out on Monday or our first team meeting. It might be Wednesday after a victory, Monday.
Right.
And I just kind of repeat.
You want to sit in the week all week.
I said it, and I just repeat it all week until they get tired. Right. Sooner or later, all of them going to hear me. You know, they didn't hear it the first time. They're going to hear it the second or third time. And so just repeat that. But we started. We started the season. We beat COVID and look across the street because somebody's dressing in your locker, all right, for the Super Bowl. Damn sure better be you. And they made it happen. And then, like you said, they beat us in our house once, all right, because we gave them 17. After that first 17, they didn't get shit, all right. But that first 7, we knew what it was going to take to get the job done.
What were the things that Tom Brady said in that pregame speech? Like, you know, and I've heard him tell some people, I heard him talk about history and all that. I was just curious about, because those guys came out fired up. I know you got the message all week. What were the last things that Tom said before they hit that field?
Yeah, this game is about honor. You know, you win this game, you'll be honored for the rest of your life. They can never take it away from you. Winning a Super Bowl is just honor, the honor to it. And I'm walking out of the locker room because I don't wait, you know, and I'm here and I got chills. And you could hear him. Yeah. It was just, we have to win this damn game. And man, cancer, our guys did their job.
Hey, oh my God. That is good, Coach. That's good. Because that's where you get 53 guys and talking about, this is about our honor. Our family, kids, grandkids will know this, will remember this day right here. Oh, my God. That must have been a hell of a moment right there. I mean, I think about it from the accomplishment. But I would have coached, oh, my God. I can't even fathom what it would have been to actually be dressing in my own locker room, getting ready to go play in a Super Bowl. I just can't fathom that, man. That must have been. It was just quite a moment. It was quite a moment to be there, Coach. It really was, Coach.
I mean, you know, Mike, we got so fortunate because we looked straight at the stadium from our practice field.
Right.
And we eat outside now. You know, so we're looking at those banners for 2 weeks. All right. So I didn't have to say too much to get them fired up.
they were ready, Coach. Coach, we talked about it. You talked about beating COVID. And you talked about that with your team, about beating COVID. But COVID this year highlighted a lot of things. It's a year of COVID, but we had a year of unrest, you know, politically, social justice-wise, and all of that, Coach. And just you having the most diverse staff. You're having African-Americans, of course, women on your staff, Coach. And then ultimately, in the midst of all of this, with that tag, you being the most diverse staff and winning a championship in your own. I mean, do you understand the depth of that story, Coach? That's a hell of a story.
Yeah, Mike, I do. And that part of it is probably what I'm the proudest of. You know, to start with no practice. You know, we go to New Orleans. I swear to God, Tom Thibodeau knew half the words meant. You know, when he's calling plays, like, who the hell's doing what on this play? And just knowing we had to grow. And no, we ain't gonna win our division. But if we get in the playoffs, brother, watch out. Because about that time, we're gonna have this shit down pat. And that's exactly what we just kept growing as a football team. Talked about all the issues that were going on, you know, keeping it open, keeping it real. Whatever you wanna do, let's do. you know, when we started, you know, in New Orleans, for every voice and saying, if you guys want to stay out there, what are we going to do? We're locking arms. All right. We're locking arms. We're sending a message. Nobody else. There was nobody else in the stadium. No fans. Saints didn't stay out. I think that sent a message for our team, too, that we're in this together.
What do you mean, Coach? Because a lot of people wanted to kind of just kind of stay out of it or not make a statement. You gave your team a chance to express themselves the way they wanted to.
Yeah. And, you know, for that, we locked arms in the end zone, and then we did the same thing for the Super Bowl. And then, you know, just, hey, if you want to sit, if you want to stand, we're all in it together. You know, whatever you want to do, we totally support you. And I think maybe Rojo sat once or twice, but that was about it. You know, I mean, but everybody, I said, look, I'm not a protester. I grew up in the riots. I seen this firsthand as a teenager. All right. How about we take action? All right. It don't take much to stand outside and beat your drum and have a microphone. Go do something about it. And in our social justice initiative, we took over the poorest school in East Tampa. All right. And man, our guys started mentoring those kids and got involved with that school and made a difference in about 30 or 40 kids' lives. Now that's taking action.
That's taking action, Coach. But Coach, you know, you've always taken action, I should say, Coach. And I get on people, because we got in this debate. And they wanted everybody to come out and say Black Lives Matter. And I said, I do too. I want everybody to say Black Lives Matter. I want everybody to bleed Black Lives Matter. But the reality is, I don't want you to just say it. I want you to say it, but I also want to see the footprints that you have in the sand, either what you've done before, and if you haven't done anything, that's fine. I want to see what you're going to do now. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just saying it, it's like you're talking about put action to it. And Coach, man, just going through and preparing for this, you've been putting action to it for a long time. Coach, I did not know that you were the first white player to share a dorm room with a Black player at Virginia Tech. And that Black player was well, why don't you tell me about that? The Black player was Rhonda Barber, his father?
Yeah, it was James Barber. He was from North Carolina, from Charlotte, North Carolina. And, you know, I got to school and Coach Devlin, he said, look, man, we got a Black running back on our team and you're going to be his roommate. I said, cool. I didn't know. I was a minority on my first football team. I was like four white kids, about 10 Black kids on our football team. So that's where I grew up. So it's like no big deal. And then, you know, we started coaching together. I got married my freshman year, so I moved out of the dorm, or I'd have flunked out. I had no chance without her. And so, yeah. And then JB and I stayed close. We started coaching together. And then Tiki and Rondi were born. We used to babysit them all the time. Jake was born. And, you know, I still call them my nephews.
That's pretty incredible, Coach. That is pretty incredible, man. And I love the fact that you know, that made a difference. That made a huge difference. And I jokingly, because I was messing with you the other day, and I don't know if people know it, tell them about the records you have at Virginia Tech for running the football. Now I'm trying to piece all this together. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, he lets the brother in, you know, bring the brother, first roommate with the brother. He got his diverse staff, African Americans and women, and he runs like that. I was like, oh my God, you know, he's been around brothers all his life. This is what this is, man. So, yeah. Tell people about the records you have at Virginia Tech.
Well, there aren't many. Because when we were a passing team, I was a running quarterback. And when we were a running team, I was a passing quarterback. But, you know, I did score 11 touchdowns my senior year. It's the only year I started. And we went to the Wishbone. And
that's 11 rushing touchdowns.
11 rushing touchdowns in one season. And I think the longest one was 7 yards. And everybody get pissed because I would not hand it. I wouldn't pitch. I kept that bitch inside the chair every time.
In the chair. Get a good chance to get it.
And Michael Vick, Tyrod Taylor, none of those guys broke the record. Gerard Evans tied it, but it took him like 14 games. You know, he went to three extra games. I mean, there's an asterisk on that.
You ever see any of those guys? You ever mess with Michael Vick? just kind of nudge him on it.
Oh, yeah. Michael tell you that story.
He likes messing with it. Coach, your involvement with quarterbacks like that, man. You know, you've got the Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, Mike Vicks. You've worked with so many quarterbacks, man. I want, what was it like? And a lot of those guys, like the Peyton Mannings, you were in their early stages. Ben Roethlisberger, their early stages, helping form and get them to where they need to be. They all ended up winning Super Bowls. You got Tom Brady in a late stage. Just talk to me about that process, getting Tom after so many years in the NFL.
Yeah, it was a lot like Carson. You know, when we got Carson Palmer later in his career, guys are – they're set in their ways, but they still look for new things, you know. Never take credit for any ability. God and their parents did all that. You know, you try to lead them along and try to teach them to play football fearlessly. I don't ever want a quarterback. I always play smart, not scared. All right, that shot's big. If it's there, take it. I don't care if it's third and two. You got the perfect matchup. Take it. And, you know, it took a while for Tom. Carson jumped on that right away, you know. And but it took a while for Tom to say, let me get this first down. You know, I said, hey, look at the picture. You had a touchdown. All right, you had a chunk. All right, yeah, we got the first down, but we had a chunk sitting out there. All right, and chunks are what makes the whole thing work. And it took him a while, but he finally got into no risk and no biscuit.
Hey, I'm trying to look at the conversation, Coach, as you're describing it. You know, Tom's had great, had his success, Deacon and Duncan, this thing, and boo boo, Deacon and Duncan, but. The game is changing too, because it's more wide open now. You gotta open up and expand. And this is how you're trying to get them to come across. Listen, I understand that first down was there, but that chunk, we could have had that first down in the touchdown.
Yeah, you can hit that. You know, it's like a Super Bowl, man. It was, what, 58 seconds? We had one timeout. Most teams are going to try to kneel. You know, go into lead. Listen, Tom Moore taught me this a long time ago. We got a timeout and there's time on the clock, we get points. And, you know, Tom Brady said, what, do what? I said, hey, we're going to two easy plays. Very, very, if we get something going, we're rolling. So we run a sprint draw, don't get nothing. They call timeout. And I think we dunked one down. They called another timeout. And then we hit them. You know, we got behind them, got the PI. We got a couple of PIs, and we walk in with a touchdown. And that's how we play the game. It's different from some. It don't always work, but that's how we play the game. If you trust your quarterback that he ain't going to turn it over to the other team, then you can play no risk and no biscuit ball.
And a lot of people talk, Coach, and I, you know, when you said that, it made me think about it. A lot of people talk, you know, about the fight between you and Tom with what we're playing, dink and dunk, or no risk, no biscuit. Ultimately, it's those plays that you made both times before the half, in the championship game and in the Super Bowl, that I think they got the Super Bowl, that really got the Super Bowl.
No doubt. No doubt about it, Mike. And, you know, it took a growing process, and it takes time, man. When you don't have OTAs and training camp and preseason game, I mean, Byron's first-time play caller with Tom, I'm the first-time head coach with Tom, and he's been married for 20 years, you know? I mean, it's different, maybe. It's like – totally different chain of thought, how we do things. And it was a great, great learning and great collaboration. I learned so much from Tom and, you know, the way he's done things. And but it's, again, you know, at the halftime in that Atlanta game, down 17, I said, we're attacking, and we ain't going to stop attacking until the season's over.
And that's how it ended up, Coach. That's exactly how it ended up, Coach. I want to get this. How did this thing start out, Coach? I mean, what was that first conversation where you realized that you were going to have a real chance at signing Tom Brady? I mean, once we heard that he was out there, that he was leaving New England, everybody starts talking about what would his landing spot be. What was that first conversation?
It was crazy, Mike, because he was recruiting me as much as I was recruiting him. I mean, he knew everything about us. He knew every player. You know, he does his homework now. He knows – I said, hey, you know, we can interchange offenses. I said, but it's, you know, 21 guys learning your offense, half of them dumb as hell. You're smart as shit. You can just learn ours. He said, oh, I'm all in. He said, Coach, you got guys running wide open all the time. I'm good. And but that verbiage and all that, because I had been in his system, you know, that old Ron Earhart system, and ours is, a lot simpler. But, you know, the evolution of it couldn't take place. But that phone call, within 5 minutes, I was, he's coming. He's coming. He was excited. I could hear it in his voice. He'd done all his homework. And, you know, the things that we talked about that I like to do, and he wanted a new challenge.
When you say he had done all his work, you mean you gleaned that he'd gone too deep into the studies of the plays or of the players from your conversation?
Both. He'd already watched. He was on the film. He knew all the guys on the roster, offense and defense. And, I mean, he had done an in-depth study before we even talked.
Wow.
That's him. That's him in a nutshell right there. He's going to have it. He's going to be thorough.
That's how thorough he is, Coach. And you speaking about me, just for me, Coach, and all honesty, you know, I've been gloating about it and happy about it. Really happy about it. Because at one time, I remember I had a conversation with somebody about Antonio Brown, and I'll just share this with them. And they were like, okay, do you think where can we get to try to reach to him, to try to pull him in and try to help him? And I just watched that video of him in Miami, and he was, you know, going at the police and all that stuff. And I said, wow. And his son said something. His son said, I love you, Dad. And he broke stride for 2 seconds, said, I love you too, son. And then he got back on the people. I said, wow. Because I'm saying, okay, in order when a man, I know, because I've been through some issues, whenever a man is in a situation, or we'll call it tailspin or whatever, you got to find something that hook that matters to him enough to help pull him out. You know what I mean? To help pull him out. For me, say, hey, you know, you're not going to be able to play football. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. I can stop doing this. I can stop whatever I'm doing. I can stop. If you're going to take that away, you know, it'll help me recognize it. And I was trying to get to it. I wanted to see his son break him and see if he'll stop. And it did not. I said, oh my God, I hope he's not too far gone. If the son didn't break him, that little kid, what can help him? What can get him? But Tom helped him in a great way, man. And to me, Coach, boy, that pushed a number one in my book. A number one in my book. When you reach down, reach back and help pull somebody up, man. Help me with talk to me about that process, how you guys decided to bring Antonio Brown in and everything.
Yeah, we had visited it in June, you know, with Tom, Jason, and I. And at that point in time, it wasn't a fit. You know, we had Mike and Chris and Scotty, and we just drafted Tyler. We had a good crew. It's like then Mike gets that high ankle sprain, and he shouldn't have been playing, but Chris was out, and it's like, all right, now he's got 8-game suspension. So about week 5, you know, Chris got a concussion, Mike's limping, and we're winning. It's like, you know, let me talk to AB and see where he's at. Mm-hmm. I just got to hear his voice. Had a great conversation with him. Said, all right, Jason, let's pull the trigger. Let's get it done. All right. And then, you know, if Mike and Chris get healthy, he was very happy to be the third wheel. Right. You know, right. He just wanted to play.
Yeah.
And he knew there was no.
He needed to reconnect.
There were no second chances. It was just, first time you don't, you're gone. Right. And he was a model citizen. We got him in, you know, then he got hurt, but we got all those guys healthy, and we had all 5 of them healthy and trying to get them all, keep them happy. But that's the beauty. When Mike Evans is your leader and Chris Godwin, they don't care who gets the ball. They just want to win, you know? So, you know, I know every receiver wants the ball, and I try to force it to Mike too much, you know, but that room was one of the best I've ever been around for the last 14 weeks.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles transform the way they work. After closing their New York City showroom, they started doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, people from all over the world can come into their showroom. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams. Coach, listen, man, let me say, because, you know, I've talked to Mike Evans, man, and I'm crazy. I told him I love him. when I first saw him back at A&M and I saw him at the combine. And he told me the other day, he said, you remember what you said to me at the combine? I said, man, yeah, I remember. I said, you don't know what that means to me that you bring it back to me. You know what I'm saying? And he says again, it means that, okay, something you said went on about his way and maybe imparted something to somebody, you know? So I was so happy to hear it. And we talked about it, man. He talked about AB and just how mature he is and handling everything. And Coach, I'm going to tell you something that you like when you just talked about you maybe forced the ball. Like, I love that. I thought that was important. I thought that was important to make sure, because I watched how you guys made sure he got that 7,000-yard season. I mean, I was like, I'm watching the game. I said, boy, they talked about this. I said, they've talked about it. They know that Mike Evans has accepted everything that they're trying to do. He's about winning. He's not about forcing them to do this. So they're going to do it to show him their appreciation. Did you guys have thoughts? Did you guys think about and wanted to make sure you got him at that 1,000-yard season?
Oh, all the way, Mike. I knew what it meant to him and what it means to all of us. When guys have the chance, when they say in the history of.
Right, Coach.
That's big shit. That's big shit. And like, I didn't realize at the time Tom had 400 yards at halftime. Or I'd have left his ass in Detroit because he could have broke Otto Graham's record that same day. And the hell, Mike's wife, they were tackling him at the end so he wouldn't get any more yard. Or we'd have got all 250 that day. It's like, okay, I got somebody in the scoreboard in the press box count. He got 150. All right, keep feeding Blaine. I don't give a shit. Just keep feeding him. Man, I know we're winning, but we don't get this damn record.
That's all right, Coach. See, people don't understand how that kind of stuff moves through the locker room. I try to tell them, don't tell me about X's and O's. You got to know how to manage these dudes in this locker room.
Yeah.
What brings the best out of them? And stuff like that coming from the top. Coach, I'm telling you, Coach, you win with that.
Same thing. December 1st every year. I say, hey, what incentives you got? All right, if you got incentives that you can reach, you make sure your assistant coach knows. It'll make the GM and the owners very happy when I say it. But, hey, I want to make sure you get your bread now, if it's possible. If it's possible.
Go. No. You absolutely, you go in there December 1st and say that now. And just the knowledge out of everybody else. In most locker rooms, every player believes that whenever you're getting that close to the incentives, that management has talked to the staff and said, make sure they don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Oh, they're trying to stop me from getting my bonuses, man. They're pulling me out of games and everything. Here again, Coach, here again. That's locker room stuff. When you're doing that, that brings in, that makes everybody wants to play and everybody want to come back. I've never heard any coach ever do that. Where did you pick that up from?
From hearing it in the locker rooms over the years.
Right.
They ain't playing because of my bonus. I was like, nobody ever get a chance. But I said, in Pittsburgh, I snuck it in them. I go to them individually in Pittsburgh. Hey, what you need? You need five catches? You need like Hines. But Mr. Rooney wanted Hines to get that 1,000 catch. You know, his last three catches, he caught three balls from minus 5 yards to get that 1,000 catches. But we got it for him.
Coach, oh my God, man, that's great, Coach. Man, Coach, where do you guys go from here now? You talked about it, and I know I've been having much longer than I expected, and I could talk to you all day, Coach. But you guys talked about it at the parade. They were talking about going for another one. Now, and somebody said run it back or something. You said tell me that story. What happened with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was Kansas City's slogan. They had T-shirts running back. We ain't doing that shit. All right. Well, that's not our stat. We're going for two. I'm saying we're going for two. And so I tried to stop that on the stage, you know, because I think it's a pretty good song. So running back, something. That ain't us. We got to have our own shit. And it's go for two. And free agency is going to be big, man. If we can keep this one together, we got a hell of a shot.
Do you believe, before I let you go, do you believe that Tom, you want to run for two and year two, possibly three? How many more years do you think Tom Brady has left in him to play? And have you guys had any discussions about that? I know the contract is only for one more year, but
I think Tom wants to play. I mean, he's remarkable how good he keeps himself. And, you know, like I said, hey, we're going for two and we take it one at a time after that.
It's all good, Coach. Coach, I wish you good luck with that going for two. Go ahead and get that back-to-back head coaching championship. Do you have two as a head coach and two as an assistant? Boy, that's a pretty good career that when it's all said and done, Coach, yeah, you could be happy about. You know,
yes,
Coach,
indeed.
Before you go, one last thing. I saw it on that road to a championship, what they did, the big story on Football Life, where you talked about all the places you've been, Coach, for all the people that give in or give up or give out as they're running towards their journey. Just tell me that story. When you say you started here, went there, started there. And I want them to hear it. But remember, this man just won Super Bowl 55 in his own home stadium. Just run that down before you leave.
Yeah, I started at Virginia Tech, got fired. Went to Mississippi State, got fired. Went back to Mississippi State, went to Alabama with Coach Bryant, got a head job at Temple, got fired. Went to Kansas City, got fired. Kansas City, back to Mississippi State. Down in New Orleans, got fired. To Alabama again, got fired. To the Colts, went to the Browns as coordinator, got fired. Went to the Steelers, receiver coach, then offensive coordinator, got retired. Then from the Steelers, where the hell we go? Oh, back to the Colts, coach of the year. And God bless my man Chuck Pagano. Thank God he's healthy. That story, they'd make a movie out of that one, Mike. Left there, went to Arizona as a head coach, truly did retire, and then came back for Tampa Bay. So I moved my wife 19 times.
19 times, Coach.
I got great advice. Our old equipment man, Luke Linden at Virginia Tech. He said, hey, son, I heard you want to coach. I said, yes, sir. He said, you better build your house on wheels.
Build it on wheels because it moves. It's a tough business, Coach. It is a tough business, and only the strong survive. And you have not only survived, you have thrived, Coach, because you are Super Bowl 55 champions. Head coach, Bruce Arians. Coach, thanks for taking the time, man. And, Coach, more so than taking the time here, thanks for taking the time, man, and showing the heart and being the man you are and all the things that you have done. Not just saying it, but really being about it. Way back when you were that kid in college and you reached across the
floor. Is George Smith still down there?
Yes, he is, man. That is my man, Coach.
I brought Coach Bryant in there in the school, man. You gotta get him to tell you that story.
I would definitely get him, but you know that's the dude that saved my life right there.
Got
me off the street. He literally got me off the streets of Fort Lauderdale, man. And I thank him every day for it.
Yeah, I signed Mike Spencer that year, and he took over for Georgia for a minute, and George came back, and I tried to get Ken Jimmy went to Pitt on me, but I brought Coach Bryant in there. That school, they were hanging out the windows. The nuns were pissed because Jerry Faust had just been in. They didn't even care.
All right, from Notre Dame, nobody cared about that in that school, big Catholic school like that, and they're so you know about education by education. Bear Bryant come in there and they go.
They were hanging out the windows.
Oh my God, that was a man. Listen, I'm telling you, man, that goes back. He was just man, Coach. I tell you, he's my miracle. He's really my miracle. No doubt in my mind, I would be in jail or dead somewhere had it not been for Coach Smith coming to literally take me off the streets of Fort Lauderdale and give me a life. So tell him
hi for me.
I would definitely do that, Coach. Thanks, all Coach, right, man. Yeah. Hey, enjoy, Coach. Enjoy your offseason as you little bet. As it may be.
Yeah. Thanks, bro.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles reinvent the way they work. When the pandemic hit, the bike shop had to close their New York City showroom. They found a way to reopen by doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, the team can meet with two or three times the number of customers than they could before. And people from all over the world can visit their showroom, learn more about their story, and others at Microsoft.com/Teams.